Now call upon our brother Arthur Hibbs to give to us the words of exhortation.
Well, that hymn we just sang basically says it all. And it summarizes much of our readings, both today and of late. Because today, we come to where a young boy who slew Goliath against all natural odds had become King David, who now was reigning in Israel and had been for many years. And David finds himself being threatened by somebody he could never have imagined, at least not to this degree, because David was faced with likely a challenge even greater than the challenge he faced many years before when he faced Goliath. In fact, this amazing man, after God's own heart, was facing a heartbreaking scenario, a scenario of which he had no power to fix. The disaster was Absalom, his wicked son. And Absalom was coming to try to kill his father. Why? Because he wanted the power. He wanted to take over Israel. And when you think of it, any battle between them would bring substantial amount of grief and bloodshed to God's people. And even though David never gave up on God, how was he to deal with this particular disaster? What was he supposed to do? There's no book to tell you what to do when your son does what this son does. David didn't want to fight his own son. He had one option only, one viable option. And what was that? To run and to flee and to get out of harm's way, as it were. When you think of David, his heart must have ached. I don't know how you sleep when you have this scenario before you. Absalom, the son that he loved, hated him. He wanted to kill him so much. He wanted to take over the kingship, and he wanted to be the power in Israel. And not only this, but Absalom was a very wicked, godless man. He's a man that considered only his own interests and what he wanted and cared very little, as it were, for God's people. And something else. David, at this point, was only the second king of Israel. And look where the kingdom was going. It was being challenged, wasn't it? It was really being challenged. Because Absalom was so, so wicked. And it was a nation whose leadership was in peril. And it wasn't just their own lives, because there was bound to be a fight for this to happen, at least the way you would normally see it. But there was also spiritual peril. Think about David pondering his own past and starting from the young, previously unknown David to the David that killed Goliath, saving Israel from servitude to the Philistines. What was the situation then? Well, God was there. God was definitely there. And David felt that, or else he wouldn't have challenged Goliath. And it was David, the son of Jesse, fleeing from Saul. And once again, God was there. And following Saul's death, David had become King David. And King David serves God faithfully. And now, years later, David had been crowned king. And we find in 2 Samuel 15:14, King David chooses now at this time, with Absalom challenging him, to flee for his life rather than to fight his own son. The events continue to try David, this man after his own God's own heart. And David is now facing a problem that meant a lot of death, because Absalom was coming. And how could David just stand still? Well, he couldn't, could he? Not without a lot of slaughter. So David had to do something. David never wanted to fight that son of his, even though he knew he was wicked. And yet this father still loved him. Well, his priority number one, when he knew of Absalom's plan to attack, likely the first thing that he did was to turn to prayer. And it's most likely what we have as Psalm 61, as most people feel it is. Remember, this is the man after God's own heart. I know I keep repeating it, but this is a very outstanding man. And David, knowing of Absalom's plan to fight, saw the only real option. And as step number one, David did something he had never done before. And what was that? David chose to flee from the throne rather than to fight his own son Absalom and his men. And after leaving the city with his men, David must also have prayed when he found out that Absalom was still following him and that a terrible meeting of the two sides was likely inevitable. He was hoping if he resigned from the throne and went somewhere else, maybe Absalom just take over that throne and maybe possibly leave him alone. I don't know. But he certainly knew now that when he came after him, despite the fact that he left the kingdom, that war seemed inevitable, or at least highly likely. And what immense disappointment David must have felt when he found out that Absalom was still searching for him. What were David's thoughts? It must have seemed incomprehensible to him. Perhaps David was looking at his own part in this relationship with his son. Possibly he's thinking, what should I have done? What did I do wrong? All those questions that you can imagine, even if you're not a parent, that a parent would feel and go over in his mind. Where did I go wrong? That kind of loop. Where did I go wrong? As I said before, I don't know how you sleep. But David could change the situation. David could not change this situation, at least not at this point. Absalom was coming. And although David was a very skilled fighter, he did not want to fight against God's people. So, given this nightmare of David's, what did he do? Because what he does teaches us. And that's the point that I want to bring forward above everything else in our considerations this morning. What's the first thing David did? David prayed. Because why? He hadn't for a long time? No. David was a man of prayer. And secondly, what did he do? Avoidance. He tried to avoid what was coming. Could he avoid Absalom? That would likely be on his mind because he loathed the idea of fighting in a civil war where you would have father versus son, Israelite versus Israelite. So David does what he has to. And he says in 2 Samuel 15, verse 14, "Come, we must flee, or none of us will escape Absalom. We must leave immediately." So David and his troops fled, hoping that this would allow Absalom to reign without a bloodbath in Israel. But as I said, he did come after him anyway. Psalm 61 is a psalm where we feel David's heart, where we see a bit into that heart of David. For Absalom was still coming after him. That's when he fled the city. This is where David is saying, "Help me, Lord." He asks God to hear my cry, as it says in Psalm 61, verse 1. "Hear my cry, O Lord, listen to my prayer." And then there's an immediate second appeal. "Lead me to the rock that is higher than I." I can't deal with this. Help me. Lead me to that rock that is higher than I. I can't do this without you, Lord. Because David was trying to avoid this slaughter. And Absalom was insistent upon continuing. Then it was Joab who sent a Cushite back to David to tell him what happened when they went to war. Because that's what happened. Absalom would not relent, and he came and he sent his troops towards where David had fled to. So, during this battle, Joab sent a Cushite back to David to tell him what happened. And what had happened in this battle between the men of Absalom and the men of David? Ahimaaz was sent back. He asked if he could also run, because David was going to send a Cushite, and Ahimaaz says, "I would like to run too." So the Cushite went first, and after Ahimaaz pleaded with David, David says, "Okay." So, Joab sent him, and he said, "You may go." So we had the two of them heading back to tell David what had happened. And Ahimaaz outran the Cushite and came to David first, didn't he? And he said, "All is well. The Lord has delivered you today." But what didn't he say? There was something missing there. He didn't say anything about Absalom. However, the Cushite, who was outrun by Ahimaaz, comes in and reports to David second, and David, I guess, had a little bit of time to think about it, and he had one very burning question, and he asked one question. He said, "Is the young man Absalom alive?" And you remember what he said? The Cushite said, "May the enemies of the Lord the king and all who rise up to harm him be like that young man." And David was shaken. He was grieved and he wept. "Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would to God that I had died for thee. Oh, Absalom, my son." I cannot imagine that heartache that David had, because Absalom wasn't just dead. Absalom was dead forever. And David knew that. He was a wicked man. and he had not repented, and he had done everything against God's will. David was God's king on Israel's throne, and he challenged it. There was no hope for Absalom. But going back, what had David said a little bit earlier? What had David done first? David had gone to God in prayer. And David knew where to go for help. And Psalm 61 is understood to be, as I said before, David's cry to God when Absalom comes to fight David and his men. And in Psalm 61, he says, "Hear my cry, O God. Listen to my prayer." And do what? "And lead me to the rock that is higher than I." And in this psalm, we have numerous exhortations, really. The psalm is not philosophical. The psalm is not just one of those nice psalms that makes us feel good. And there's nothing wrong with that. This psalm has to be important to us also, if it's to be any help at all. In Psalm 61, David explores a number of very, very important personal feelings. David describes what he is dealing with, what his problems are, how he feels, and the hope that he believes in, all in one package, and it's 8 short verses. So, what action comes first? Prayer. "Hear my cry, O God, and listen to my prayer," verse 1, appealing to God. And secondly, verse 2, "From the ends of the earth I call to you. I call as my heart grows faint." He's being absolutely honest about where he is, what he's feeling, what he needs, what he's afraid of. And then a third and final appeal in verse 2, which is again a request for God to lead me to the rock that is higher than I. My heart is in shambles. I need that strength. Lead me to that point, Lord. Show me the direction. And David is appealing for God to do what? To work in my life. For without God, David and the whole nation of Israel is pretty much lost if they continued on as Absalom had led. And David knows this. And I would guess that at times, every one of us has tried to solve our problems by ourselves. And for most of us, that's a somewhat natural response. A response that says, "I have a problem, now how am I going to fix this problem?" But when it's important, we all need to be led. Again, what did David pray about in verse 2? "Lead me to that rock that is higher than I." Don't we also need to remember this? Not just to trust in what we do. But there was more. What was it? David was calling God based on what? David's initial choice to trust God early in his life. And this in turn provided something else that helps every one of us individually. And what's that? It's one word. The word is precedence. It's what David experienced in the early days of his life when he chose to trust God on an ongoing basis. And it perhaps was introduced earlier than Goliath because of what he had done. But Goliath was one of those who nobody in Israel wanted to fight. And we'll go into that in a little bit, but what did this choice that David made do? It encouraged David to fully believe God and to therefore seek God in prayer. And what's that verse again? As my heart grows faint, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. Verse 2. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I, because without going there, I'm not going to make it. And we have to understand that in our own lives, don't we? And we see it probably all too often. But when we see it, we have to recognize it and address it and bring this to God. What was David asking? Strengthen me to be able to know what is the right way, Lord, and help me to take that right way. What was David doing? He was seeking God. He wanted him to lead him. And David was ready to be led. Verse 3 of Psalm 61. You have been my refuge, a strong tower against the foe. David placed his trust in God being there for him, because this has happened before. God had been there for David in the past, and God cared for him in the past. And David felt God can do this again, for God keeps his promises. God had always looked after David when he faced problems in his earlier life, such as the first thing we understand about him is when he was minding the flocks when he was very young, and he was fighting off lions and bears. So what did David say in the next verse in Psalm 61? I long to dwell where? I long to dwell in your tent forever and take refuge in the shelter of your wings. God was always there when God sought him in the past. Precedents, the things that he had chosen that told him, this is how it works. God is going to work in my life. And he does. He works in our lives when we open our hearts for him. And David believed God. And in seeking God, David looked to what? How he could get through the day? How he's going to make it? No. It was much more than that. David was looking to the future. His future. David's vision wasn't right now. David's vision was the kingdom age. And he once again reiterates the source that will accomplish this. He takes refuge in God in verse 3. And I'm reading NIV, but in some of what I quote is King James, but yours is going to be similar. Verse 3, you have been my refuge, a strong tower. This is the David that trusted so much in God that at a young age, he asked to fight the giant Goliath, didn't he? But not as a path to possible fame. What was it that was driving David when he went and he heard Goliath challenging Israel? We clearly see it in 1 Samuel 17, verse 9, and you don't need to turn there because you know this, where Goliath says, if he be able to fight and kill me, then we will be your servants, but if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us. The short of it was, no one in the camp of Israel took up the challenge, not one. However, I said, when David came to bring food and to his brothers, David heard Goliath when he came to do this. And what was his immediate response when he heard Goliath's challenge? Chapter 17, 1 Samuel, verses 32 to 37, David said to Saul, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. And what did Saul say? He said, you're not able to go out and fight this Philistine. You're only a boy. and he's been a fighter from his youth. Was Saul correct? Absolutely, Saul was right. He was a young man, and he had no battle experience. What was he thinking? But, yes, David was able because God worked through this man of God. What did David say to Saul after that? David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. And when a lion and a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it and I seized it." I can just see this in my mind. "And I struck it and I killed it." Was David exaggerating? Was that correct? No, he wasn't exaggerating, and yes, that was absolutely true. David continues, "Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them." Why is that? Well, first of all, it's because God is big in David's life. God is powerful in David's life, even at that young age. But David tells us, because he has defiled the armies of Israel. Is that what he said? That's not what David said. David said, because he has defied the armies of the living God. And that's an immense difference. A difference that most people wouldn't have made. But David did, because that's who David was. This was a much higher way of thinking. And this is very difficult for the human mind to act on, to trust someone we can't see. That's very difficult. What David said was accurate and completely true. David was the one who saw in faith. Why? Because unlike most people, David could envision the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen. He was a long lot before his time because Hebrews, well, that was in David's mind. Hebrews 11:1. I don't mean that literally. I mean that's where David was. That's where what he believed. David saw through faith. And on this occasion with Goliath, nobody else had better vision. Nobody else had stronger faith than David. Who is this that David believed in and believed to the point of putting his life on the line? Well, when Saul says, "You're not able to do this," what did David tell him? He said, "The Lord who rescued me from the lion, the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, he will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine." And I would guess that Saul was moved, and moved so much that he said to David something that nobody, I think, in the army would have thought Saul had said, would say. "Go, and the Lord be with you." What had Saul just done? He hadn't just told David to go fight. And oops, if he dies, that wasn't it. There were no other volunteers to fight Goliath, but all Israel could go into servitude to the Philistines if this didn't work out. This was a national disaster if David didn't win. If it didn't turn out right for this boy, be truthful. Would you or would I have taken this chance if we were standing in Saul's place? Would we? On this young, unproven man, this young man's unproven claim, if you were in Saul's position, would you have done that? This will affect the whole kingdom of Israel. Initially, what had Saul said to David? Saul had said, "You're only a young man," and he, Goliath, has been a warrior from his youth. Was Saul correct? Absolutely, he was correct. Everything he said was right. Saul had just put his trust in what David said regarding the power of God who worked in this very young man's life. That was probably the highlight of Saul's existence, was that one time when he took this chance, as it may have appeared to be in his mind. My question is, again, would you or I have done what Saul did? The physical odds were really clear. Young, inexperienced, battle. What we really had here, we had the rookie versus the top pro, if you like. What would you or I have done in Saul's shoes? It's true that he had very few options to hand because nobody else was going to do it. However, most of Saul's troops, this must have seemed to be very foolish, as I said before. This young man, no experience, no military experience whatsoever. Was that correct? Yep, that was correct. It was like a death wish, some people would think. But as I said, David was backed by Saul, and David's faith was greater than Goliath's seasoned skills. And God was there, and he was looking after his people through this very young man of faith. This was the very confident and spiritually wise David at a relatively young age. And although he was young, he was very mature in something that is very important. He was mature in faith and in trust. As to who it was that made and controls the earth and everything else, David doesn't limit what it is that God can do, does he? And what did David do? He killed Goliath, not with something fancy like a sword, but with a stone. He only had to do it once, first shot, right in the head, and he fell clunk onto the ground. And then we look at each other, we look at ourselves, we look at us. And I think sometimes we have all tried to solve our own problems by ourselves. It's sort of a natural thing. For most of us, that's simply a natural response. And for a number of things, in a number of situations, that's just fine. Say if you're trying to pick what you're going to buy for your groceries or what color of sweater you're going to buy, that's arbitrary. That's not what I'm talking about, is it? But what about the important decisions that we're faced with? How do we wait? How long do we wait, rather, before we take it to the Lord in prayer? Despite our best efforts, we all need to be reminded of what is truly real and who is truly real and who it is that controls everything. And this morning we're trying to focus our thoughts on the emblems before us and what they mean. So we leave young David and King David, thankful for his example. And when you go through Psalm 61, it's all there. What we do, what we need to do. Hear my cry, O God. Listen to my prayer. I call to you. That's our responsibility, isn't it? I call to you. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. Why? For you have been my refuge, a strong tower against the foe. And what's our goal, brothers and sisters? I long to dwell in your tent forever and take refuge in the care of your wings. That's what David said. For you've heard my vows, O God. You've given me the heritage of those who fear your name. Increase the days of the king's life, his years for many generations. May he be enthroned in God's presence forever. Is he looking towards Messiah? Appoint your love and faithfulness to protect him. Then will I ever sing to your praise and to your name. He's talking about the kingdom. Then will I ever sing and fulfill your vow and fulfill my vows day after day. Then I will always do this. I think David, when he understood the situation with Absalom and all the various options, this is where his heart and his mind went. And it's where our hearts and minds need to be, isn't it? When Absalom was trying to kill his father David, David called upon the Lord. He was truly a man after God's own heart, wasn't he? And what did he say? Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. This is the man who put his life in God's hands, not just in front of Goliath, many, many times, trusting in the God he couldn't see, but the God he was convinced, absolutely convinced, was real. And by God's design, the Savior Jesus Christ will come back to this earth, about which time David speaks of in the last verse, in Psalm 61, verse 8, then will I ever sing praise to your name and fulfill my vows day after day. That will be the kingdom age, and David will see it. This is the kingdom that will come upon the earth because of God's love, his patience. And for all of us, because Jesus died, that we might also have this blessing of life. And isn't that why we're all here this morning? Of course it is. And when the emblems are being circulated this morning, we remember David's greater son, our Lord Jesus Christ, and we try once again to focus on the amazing hope that every one of us has been given. Even so, come, Lord Jesus.